seems to be a primitive wiring of the human species to face only an immediate threat, only something kicking in the front door. But the tidal wave looming over the house is not recognized or acknowledged, and it seems to be something that many have not been able to face. And let's add programming to that. How programmed are we as societies to want only a happy ending, or I don't want to hear about it? And that is so incredibly prevalent in our populations. And again, I would argue that the only solace there is in knowing you're exercising your will correctly, playing your part, trying to preserve something for our posterity, for our children, for the web of life on which their lives completely depend. And that's the only place I've ever been able to find solace, is knowing that I'm doing everything in my power to be a part of the cure and not the disease. And that's where solace and meaning and purpose lies. Not in football games and pizza and Coke and beer and what purpose is there in that? And given what we face right now, how can we face our children if we don't properly prioritize, Jay? How can we possibly inflict the damage we have on this planet, this miraculous planet? And it is truly incomprehensibly miraculous. How can we do what we've done without consequence? If we can stop what's happening in our skies, if we can allow the planet to respond on its own to the damage done, then we may at least at minimum buy time.
It lays the predicate and the foundation for the development of a weather satellite that will permit man to determine the world's cloud layer and ultimately to control the weather, and he who controls the weather will control the world.
I begin to lose on some days 50, 60, 70% of my solar panel, solar PV uptake, whatever these aircraft were emitting in the skies. And I knew that could not be just, quote, condensation. I was amazed at the amount of data on climate engineering, geoengineering, solar radiation management. Began to do rain tests to see if these materials were in my precipitation, starting with aluminum nanoparticles, which is a primary element named in climate engineering patents. I had hoped I would not find this in my rain. I did. I continued to test over the next 18 months the levels of aluminum in my rain. And again, for those who don't know, bioavailable freeform aluminum is toxic to all life forms, period, no exceptions. We have film footage of these aircraft at altitude, nozzles visible, retrofit nozzles mounted on the wing pylons, aimed into the exhaust jet stream. So again, if people don't believe what they see with their own eyes, it's difficult to break that ideology. 800 pages long, outlining the scope and scale of U.S. climate engineering operations, even back that far, with cooperation with otherwise adversarial nations. And that's key, Jay. Again, we're testing precipitation. We're not guessing. We've done hundreds and hundreds of lab tests working with major institutions like University of Minnesota, testing at institutions like Rensselaer Polytechnic in New York. We took a National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration flying lab to altitude. It's all in our groundbreaking documentary, The Dimming, now with over 26 million views on YouTube in spite of censorship. And we found exactly what we knew we'd find at altitude in this NOAA flying lab with top scientists in it, aluminum nanoparticulates. And that's a primary element in climate engineering patents. Again, is it any wonder that Alzheimer's and dementia is going off the scale when we're breathing this material in with every single breath we take? And again, there's no regulation. So what you stated is completely true. It's an absolute no regulated physics lab in our skies, a battleground, because this toxic precipitation is falling. It's killing soil microbiome, killing root systems. The Amazon is now a carbon source, not a carbon sink. It's a carbon source. Same with northern latitude boreal forest, carbon source. In the case of all the COP conferences, are they truly trying to do something necessary and beneficial there? No. Smoke and mirrors. Again, the purpose of those conferences is to force countries to actively or passively participate in the climate engineering operations while keeping business as usual. That's why those conferences take place.
So today I'm speaking with Dane Wigington, a prominent figure in the climate engineering activist community. He's the founder and lead researcher of Geoengineering Watch, a platform dedicated to raising awareness about covert global climate engineering operations, often referred to as geoengineering. Dane has a professional background in solar energy and previously worked for Bechtel Power Corporation. His interest in geoengineering began when he noticed a significant reduction in solar energy uptake at his home near Lake Shasta, California. This observation led him to investigate and campaign against what he believes are deliberate climate modification programs. And he joins me today to raise alarm on this issue, one that is often relegated to the fringe corners of online forums and labeled as a wild conspiracy theory. And yet the evidence should speak for itself. And Dane joins me now to present that evidence. So thank you for being here, sir.
Thank you, James. Thanks to you and your listeners for the willingness to investigate what's happening in our skies. And there is literally mountains of data to back up the fact that these programs have been operational for over 75 years.
Can you take us back to the moment that first made you seriously question what was happening in the skies above us? What triggered your investigation into geoengineering at the beginning?
I grew up in smoggy Southern California and spent my early adult life working toward getting out of that environment. Made it to Northern California, built a large off-grid home, solar, wind, and hydro. That's part of my background with Bechtel Power Corporation. And as soon as this project was completed, I began to lose, on some days, 50, 60, 70% of my solar panel, solar PV uptake from whatever these aircraft were emitting in the skies. And I knew that could not be just, quote, condensation. I was amazed at the amount of data on climate engineering, geoengineering, solar radiation management that I had not seen, even having some background in the solar industry. And I began to do rain tests to see if these materials were in my precipitation, starting with aluminum nanoparticles, which is a primary element named in climate engineering patents. I had hoped I would not find this in my rain. I did. I continued to test over the next 18 months the levels of aluminum in my rain. And again, for those who don't know, bioavailable freeform aluminum is toxic to all life forms, period, no exceptions. So certainly if it's in your rain, there's a massive problem. There's a massive threat. Levels continued to go up, and I was simply faced with the fact that these operations were real, ongoing, major effort to cover them up for obvious reasons. The liability issues are incalculable. I've been at this fight ever since, James.
See, I think this subject can cause such a knee-jerk reaction in people. When you bring up the concept of controlling the weather or geoengineering through technology, most people just seem to assume that this is a science fiction idea and it's not possible. But there's actually a detailed history of weather manipulation from warfare to agriculture. So I think one of the important places to start off with is the beginning of weather manipulation studies. When did this first become a focus of research and development in the modern world? And where has it gone since then?
Well, that is a truly profound factor. And you're correct that most people do knee jerk, in spite of the fact that there are, again, mountains of historical data, patents, film footage, government documents, Senate documents. I mean, it's endless. We have film footage of these aircraft at altitude, nozzles visible, retrofit nozzles mounted on the wing pylons, aimed into the exhaust jet stream. So again, if people don't believe what they see with their own eyes, it's difficult to break that ideology. But if we go all the way back, Jay, to 1923, patented processes of tanks, pumps, dispersion from biplanes. We have film footage of these planes flying in formation, dispersing in 1923. How far have they come since? We fast forward to 1947, Project Cirrus, U.S. military's first attempts to manipulate hurricanes. In fact, with very little input, they were so successful. At the time, they diverted a cyclone into Georgia. Lawsuits were threatened. They then went under the radar, so to speak. But they continue with their operations. Now we fast forward to 1962, on film, on the record, former U.S. President Lyndon Johnson ranting like a lunatic.
It lays the predicate and the foundation for the development of a weather satellite that will permit man to determine the world's cloud layer and ultimately to control the weather. And he who controls the weather will control the world.
This is the first 30 seconds, by the way. We show film footage of this in our weekly Global Alert News broadcast. That's a commercial-free, non-political, hard-hitting headlines for the week. And the first 30 seconds is Lyndon Johnson, 1962, stating we had the power to control the world's cloud layer then, and quote, he who controls the weather controls the world. Late 60s, Project Popeye, historical record, Vietnam. The U.S. military so successful at controlling precipitation over Vietnam that by the 70s, they passed INMON treaties, environmental modification treaties, forbidding weather manipulation in wartime. But again, all these processes are patented. We have a list of over 200 patents at geoengineeringwatch.org. By the mid-70s, we have a U.S. Senate document, 800 pages long, outlining the scope and scale of U.S. climate engineering operations, even back that far, with cooperation with otherwise adversarial nations. And that's key, Jay. Think about this. We have historical record of Soviet weather modification scientists touring U.S. weather modification facilities at the height of the Cold War, and our scientists touring theirs, because you can't just geoengineer over your own country. There has to be intergovernmental cooperation. And that 800-page Senate document I just mentioned specifically calls for intergovernmental cooperation between, quote, otherwise adversarial nations. So, again, I could rattle on and on and on, but the fact that the whole climate science community is describing exactly what we see in our skies, the use of jet aircraft to disperse particles to blot out some of the sun's incoming thermal energy with no regard, apparently, for the consequences. Data, film footage, documents to back up what's going on in our skies, aside from people's own eyesight, is mind-numbing, that people can be so programmed that they're not willing to look at the data. They're simply come to a conclusion that feels better than facing the truth.
One thing that I would like to ask in relation to this is, you know, you've got a lot of areas of science where it's a bit of a free-for-all and there's not much regulation. People just seem to be able to do whatever wacky experiments they would like to do, especially in the health industry and in pharmaceuticals. Would you say that with this, it's kind of the same, that the atmosphere is considered a bit of a free rein between some of these agencies and they can propose and do all sorts of experiments that they would like to do without much oversight? Or is there actually more of a concerted agenda attached to this? Like, is there a deliberate plan in relationship to the spreading of these aerosols? Is it a unified front across countries for something? Or is it more about random experiments from different groups?
There's certainly a very high level of cooperation in regard to the comparison with the health industry. This is not the same in the sense that this is worse. It's even worse, way worse. By design, they have established a system that ensures there's no regulation or way to regulate what they're doing in our skies. This is a climate engineering Manhattan Project, period. And for those that people ask sometimes, Jay, why would they want to manipulate the weather? Why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't those in power want to have this covert weapon of control with which they can bring populations to their knees without those populations ever even knowing they're under assault? So let's go to 9/11. Post 9/11, we had the former NATO Supreme Commander General Leslie Clark had a list of the Middle Eastern countries that were to be targeted immediately after 9/11, a list that clearly existed before 9/11. Subsequently, every one of those countries underwent a once in 1,000-year drought. That's statistically impossible as being a coincidence. The precipitation was cut off to those countries, and we have, in the case of Iran, a country that's always been targeted because of their oil reserves by Western powers, on the floor of the UN stating that NATO was cutting off the precipitation to their country. What happens then? You cut off precipitation, you destabilize food supplies, you destabilize populations, countries easier to control. Again, this is obviously a covert weapon of the controllers. Again, we're testing precipitation. We're not guessing. We've done hundreds and hundreds of lab tests working with major institutions like University of Minnesota, testing at institutions like Rensselaer Polytechnic in New York. We took a National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration flying lab to altitude. It's all in our groundbreaking documentary, The Dimming, now with over 26 million views on YouTube in spite of censorship. And we found exactly what we knew we would find at altitude in this NOAA flying lab with top scientists in it, aluminum nanoparticulates. And that's a primary element in climate engineering patents. Again, is it any wonder that Alzheimer's and dementia is going off the scale when we're breathing this material in with every single breath we take? And again, there's no regulation. So what you stated is completely true. It's an absolute no regulated physics lab in our skies, a battleground. And now as things begin to truly fall apart, we believe this former cooperation between major powers is starting to disintegrate into weather warfare on an even larger scale.
And there's been recent attention to it. So there's been a lot of hype and concern over the recent announcements from my government here in the UK regarding the allocation of, I think it was around £56 million for weather manipulation experiments with the intention of dimming the impact of the sun. Now, why the UK of all places would decide it's receiving too much sunlight is beyond me. And the irony of our recent investments into solar energy infrastructure are not lost on me in regards to that either. But I heard you speaking about that with Jimmy Dore about this issue, and you're saying it's a bit of a red herring, so to speak. Can you just unpack that a little more for everyone? Are you saying we shouldn't be concerned about these experiments?
Well, the very notion that they might experiment is all smoke and mirrors. These programs have been ongoing for over three quarters of a century. So they're just simply testing the water for public response, perhaps. But these programs are in the trillions of dollars and have been ongoing for over three quarters of a century. So when they put out PR that they could, may, might do something, that simply tends to diffuse the population's increasing understanding that these programs are already ongoing. So again, mass distraction, just like we had here in the US, Jay. We had so much major media hype about two clowns from Silicon Valley that launched a few balloons called Make Sunsets. All major media covered that. Not a word about the climate engineering elephant in the sky. It's completely blotting out formerly blue skies, derailing the hydrological cycle, destroying the ozone layer, and contaminating every single breath we take. And right now in the US, and also in the UK, it's the same, but they're being particularly aggressive in the US. It's called chemical ice nucleation for weather modification. And that is seeding cloud moisture with endothermic reacting elements that cause a cool, dense layer of air to descend to the surface. They can turn what should have been a liquid precipitation event into a frozen precipitation event. Thus, we have baseball and softball size hail falling everywhere now in the US. And it flash cools the surface. We have these weather whiplash and temperature whiplash 30, 40, 50 degrees Fahrenheit in a day. That's not nature. They're chemically nucleating the clouds. So their desperation at this point, climate engineering has done immense damage to the planet. And I'm not denying other sources of damage. We've been very, very bad stewards of the planet. Too many people in alt media want to deny that. And that's unfortunate because that robs credibility from this issue. But on top of that, when you use the weather as a weapon and you're trying to mask the total damage done to the planet, much of it from these operations to begin with, while inflicting yet more damage, Jay, isn't that the pharmaceutical industrial mentality? Take this for that symptom, and by the way, here's 20 side effects, and you need 20 more pharmaceuticals for those. And again, it's a runaway train of insanity. Too many people invested in these operations, too much money being made. They're not going to turn back unless we stop them.
You're talking about passive negative impact on like neurological health from inhalation of these particulates and obviously the impact on agriculture and environmental. What about deliberate, localized, kinetic response, the ability to actually create volatile weather systems as a weapon? Do you think that that's something that's possible?
No question. The science is clear. There's absolutely no question. Again, I cite going back well over half century in Vietnam, Project Popeye. There's no question they can have a very real and immediate effect on precipitation. On the chemical cooldowns I just mentioned, if your listeners searched Chinese scientists create artificial snowstorm, they'll find popular science covered it. CNN, MSNBC, The Guardian, everybody covered it. Chinese engineering chemical snowstorms. They did several billion dollars worth of damage to Beijing. At that point, they went under the radar. The Chinese openly announced that they hoped by 2025, and now we're there, that they would be able to engineer rain and snow storms over half their landmass. So again, these are patented processes. The science is clear. It's not disputed. So in regard to engineering weather, is that not winter weather warfare? These flash cool downs that are wiping out agricultural regions everywhere from flash hail, flash flood, flash freeze, flash drought. And we hear those flash terms all the time now because this is an unnatural influence on the climate system. So again, for this level of denial to persist in spite of mountains of real-time data is truly mind-numbing. But Jay, I would argue that the population won't have the option of denial for much longer. The damage done is so immense and manifesting so rapidly that there will be no room for denial for much longer.
You said that there's likely a kind of an overarching agenda that's been going on for quite some time in relation to these experiments and this deployment of particular ways of geoengineering. people talk a lot these days about globalism and a globalist agenda, the World Economic Forum, the Bilderberg Group, you know, these elites that meet in these very secretive places and decide our fates for us for the next 100 years. Now, do you think that that is in any way incorporated under the World Economic Forum umbrella? Are these people, would you say that they are connected to this type of agenda if there is an agenda to be connected to?
Absolutely. It can't be otherwise. And Jay, if we look at, for example, the COP climate conferences that are held around the world.
Well, like the one that they're about to cut, I think they've cut an entire highway through the Amazon jungle to make it easier to access COP30.
Yes.
The hypocrisy just is mind-blowing. I can't even fathom that level of hypocrisy. It feels deliberate.
No, I'm with you. I follow that, cover that in my broadcast as well. Yeah, that's typical. And they show up in their private jets. And this is... there's many levels to this that are served by that. So when many see that, they think, well, if they're this hypocritical, then there can't be any real damage done to the planet. And that's unfortunate to come to that conclusion, because the damage is very, very real. Much of it from climate engineering. Climate engineering has disabled the planet's ability to respond to the damage done, because it's, in the case of the Amazon forest, for example, because this toxic precipitation is falling, it's killing soil microbiome, killing root systems. The Amazon is now a carbon source, not a carbon sink. It's a carbon source. Same with northern latitude boreal forests, carbon source. In the case of all the COP conferences, are they truly trying to do something necessary and beneficial there? No. Smoke and mirrors. Again, the purpose of those conferences is to force countries to actively or passively participate in the climate engineering operations while keeping business as usual. That's why those conferences take place. Nothing legitimate about them. There's nothing benevolent with climate engineering. And in the case of all the so-called environmental groups, Geoengineering Watch attorneys communicated with all the attorneys from the major environmental groups, Greenpeace, Sierra Club, WWF, and all the rest. None of them were willing to acknowledge the climate engineering issue because they didn't want to lose their 501c3 nonprofit. Is that not the epitome of criminal hypocrisy? So again, there's more than enough denial to go around on all sides of the fence here. And there's been a very orchestrated effort, very effective effort by those in power to drive a wedge in between populations so that people who do know damage has been done to the environment and do care about that, if they hear anybody bring up the climate engineering issue, they put their fingers in their ears and behave like kindergartners, because they've been taught and trained that anybody who wants to expose climate engineering denies the other sources of damage. That's not true. Not in the case of geoengineeringwatch.org. But on the opposite side of the fence, we have people willing to face climate engineering, but then that don't want to acknowledge all the other sources of damage to the planet. So we need to build bridges, not burn them. And what we would argue at geoengineeringwatch.org is, how can we have any legitimate discussion about climate anything from any perspective without first and foremost addressing the climate engineering elephant in the equation, aka weather warfare?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I mean, there's a lot of people in the alternative space that completely dismiss any sort of climatological issues. And like you said, that's not the way to go. There are obvious issues happening climatologically around the world, which are just objective based on the behaviors of the environment, the changes in the weather systems. And so, you know, we have to be looking at that with a critical eye. But I think you would agree that this this mainline environmentalist institutional kind of propaganda has been hijacked by extremely elitist ideals and groups that don't represent the people, that absolutely don't represent any sort of environmental care. But people have been, in many ways, not just in environment, but we were talking about health and things like the pandemic and the way in which people were coerced so heavily into adhering to institutions blindly without any sort of forethought. And that seems to be the same case with environmentalist groups and, you know, this kind of adherence to an institutional plan, an institutional method. They're going to help us figure it out when they're the ones that are responsible for so much of the polluting of our world. So, you know, the hypocrisy is absolutely palpable when it comes to the elites and the kind of monopolization of the environmental industry.
It is. But with that, what we would caution is, we hope people would understand that any form of human activity that affects the energy balance of the planet or the planet's natural systems is a part of the problem. Climate engineering is the single largest piece in this equation, but by no means the only piece. Again, we've been very poor stewards of the planet. We're We're pumping out 100 million barrels and incinerating of carbon fuel a day, 100 million plus barrels, 26 million tons of coal. We're cutting down the forest, paving the planet, and poisoning the oceans. All of that is a part of the problem. But when you intentionally climate engineer, and to give it an idea of the scale of climate engineering, Jay, based on hundreds of lab tests taken over Minnesota, working with the University of Minnesota and calculating how much material is in that rain and projecting that globally, it appears something in the range of 40 to 60 million tons of nanoparticles are being dispersed into our skies annually as part of these programs. So when we look at the claimed care about the environment, for example, in California, we have very strict air regulation laws with CARB, California Air Resources Board. I mean, literally, you can't buy a generator here now because they're trying to restrict particulate pollution while they ignore, categorically ignore, a source of atmospheric particle pollution that's literally mathematically hundreds of thousands of times larger. They ignore that because the system has been designed not to address that issue. So we have that level of hypocrisy going on right now. And certainly the public needs to investigate this issue, understand the kind of game playing that's going on. And that bottom line is, whatever a person's cause or concern at this point, Jay, if we can't breathe without sucking up this toxic plethora of climate engineering particles that are raining down through the air column, we have a fight for life right here, right now. If we can deal with that, we can sort out the rest later. But we have to stop what's happening in our skies or we're not going to be here long. And that's a mathematical, statistical certainty.
I'm pretty sure this is something that you brought up with Jimmy Dore when it comes to the density of these particulates in the atmosphere and how the studies that are done, like the kind of regulatory studies, purposefully miss this type of a metric that would be extremely alarming. Can you kind of break that down to give people an idea of how they're able to avoid the direct statistics for how much is going into the atmosphere?
Certainly. The air quality testing systems, and now they're being gutted even further from the current administration. I'm not for any administration or any political party, but right now, environmental everything is being gutted further, and that helps them to hide these operations. But even before this, we have air quality testing that's generally PM10, 10 microns, at best occasionally PM2.5, 2.5 microns. We're talking about nanoparticles being used in climate engineering operations. They're exponentially smaller. They're inconceivably smaller. You can fit up to 100,000 nanoparticles across the width of a single human hair. It's difficult to comprehend that. So this mountain of toxic elements, the smaller the particle, the more harmful it is, no matter what element it is. And we're talking about harmful elements on top of that. All of it going under the radar by design because there's no official air quality testing that even looks for it, let alone discloses it. Same is true with UV radiation. This is a completely fictitious number. The UV readings are totally fictitious. They meter down to 300 nanometers. That's half the UVB spectrum. They don't meter for the other half, and they don't meter for any UVC. We know we're getting UVC in the surface. This is a DNA damaging spectrum of UV radiation, climate engineering operations, not just the oxidative particles being sprayed in the atmosphere, but also the frequency transmissions used to manipulate those particles, is destroying the ozone layer. Jay, you remember the, or you may remember the hairspray cans that were blamed for destroying the ozone layer decades back. That was the scapegoat. And there are harmful CFCs and aerosol dispersants. But that's an ant compared to an elephant when we're talking about climate engineering, which is the single greatest source destroying the ozone layer without which we all die in very short order. Can't grow food anymore. No more plankton, no more fish. So bottom line is climate engineering has such an immense impact on the planet's life support systems across the board that if we don't deal with this, no other causes or concerns will matter. And I don't mean centuries out. I don't mean decades out. I mean, we're on a trajectory for a very different planet by the end of this decade. And Jay, you'll have people ask you, why would they do this to themselves? Have you ever had that question come up?
I was literally about to say to you, they breathe the same air as us. So what exactly is it? Is it ignorance? Is it self-immolation? What's going on?
Let's look at what they've already done to themselves. Why would they detonate 2,400 nuclear bombs? Project Starfish Prime, Project Fishbowl, detonation of hydrogen bombs in the magnetosphere that they thought could collapse the entire atmosphere. Did that stop them? No, it didn't stop them. We have 442 nuclear power plants online right now. 442 nuclear power plants. Fukushima may be an extinction level event by itself if other factors don't do the job first. We're building 60 more nuke plants right now. Takes about 30 plus years to cold shut down a nuke plant. as society collapses, and that is a given at this point, and I know that's a very difficult pill to swallow. If you're in a car going 100 miles an hour, and this is a metaphor for industrialized, militarized society, and you're 10 feet from impact, you can pump the brakes all you want. You're going to hit, period. We're through the guardrail. This is, as I refer to often, the Thelma and Louise moment. We're sailing through the air toward the bottom of the canyon. Those nuclear power plants are going to shut down, are going to melt down. We're building 60 more. We're not dealing with sanity. We're dealing with power addicts, and they don't care about the consequences of their actions. And that's a psychological, statistically anomalated or a documented fact that from psychoanalysis, those in power have a common thread. And that is a near total lack of comprehension as to the consequences of their actions, even to themselves. Why would else would we build enough nuclear weapons to destroy humanity thousands of times over? So for people that fall back on that, well, they wouldn't do this to themselves, therefore it can't be happening, I'm not going to believe what I see with my own eyes, that's a grave mistake.
How do we best differentiate between, specifically if we're talking about things like contrails versus chemtrails, prosaic atmospheric phenomena that pose no threat from things like planes, and then deliberate chemtrails containing these aerosols that are injected into the atmosphere? How can people best differentiate between what is essentially a prosaic situation and what is a risk?
If they're seeing any distinct dispersion trail in the sky, that in all likelihood is a sprayed particulate dispersion. All military tankers and all commercial aircraft are high bypass turbofan jet engines. That's a jet powered fan. 90% of the air that moves through that engine is not combusted. By design, it's nearly incapable of producing any condensation trail except under rare and extreme circumstances. So, bottom line is there are many different types of dispersions we see and observe. And that doesn't mean one's a quote condensation trail and one is a dispersion. Again, in almost all cases, these are various forms of dispersions. Even in a quote blue day where you don't have the very visible in your face grid patterns, you have shorter bright dispersions under high pressure. And near the end of those days, the atmosphere is so silvery white, Jay, that if you put something up and block the sun, you can see a halo around it. If you look toward the horizon, the skies are virtually white. And that's on a quote clear day. It's not clear. And I would encourage your listeners, do this test to understand how much we're breathing. Take the brightest flashlight you can find. Go somewhere where there's no light pollution, no other sources of light on a dark night, on a day when they're dispersing, the air is clearly hazy. But if you shine that light up straight at the sky and look straight up through the beam, not sideways through it, but straight up through it, you have to see it to believe it. It looks like you're in a snowstorm, and we're breathing that. In fact, so much material is coming down in our precipitation and through our air column that where I live in Northern California, the historical pH values for the soils were highly acidic, 5.5, 5.6. It has changed those pH values nearly 10 times toward alkaline, nearly 10 times. It's killing everything here. Every fir tree in Western North American forest is dying, and that's not my opinion. It's not theory or conjecture. We have peer-reviewed study to prove that. And again, there are many causes, but most of those are related directly to climate engineering, and that's not a denial of the other sources of damage, but it's stating that in the case of toxic precipitation, it affects virtually everything. And yes, we have decomposing plastics in the environment and other sources of industrialized pollution. We recognize that. But if it's free-form aluminum, which doesn't exist in nature naturally, that's been mined, refined, and dispersed, primary element in climate engineering patents, toxic to all life forms. We're in the fast track to a lifeless planet, and they're not going to stop, Jay, unless we stop them.
Is it reversible in our lifetime? Is it changeable, or have we crossed beyond that point now?
We're past the point of no return, far past, in regard to the planet we formerly known. And again, that's not scientifically disputable. And we have so many people operating from ideology because that is simply too bitter a pill to swallow. And I have very educated PhDs that tell me to my face, it can't be that bad because it can't be that bad. What kind of a basis is that for a conclusion? And so again, we have to face this oncoming train head on, Jay. I mean, if you're standing, an example I used often, if you're standing in the freeway at rush hour, are you going to turn your back to traffic? Is that going to save you? No. So let me put that into time frames. If we look at parallel events, we are neck deep in the sixth great mass extinction right now. 80 to 90% of Earth's insect populations gone. now. That's terrestrial and aquatic. About 80% of Earth's wildlife populations have perished in the last 40 years alone. Fisheries, global pelagic fish populations down 90% now. The rest are contaminated. Obviously, those trajectories aren't hard to put together as to where we're headed. So if we look at past events, most comparable, mass extinction 55 million years ago, it's called the Petum event. And the equilibrium period after that was about 10 to 20 million years. What's happening now is exponentially worse because it's happening exponentially faster. It's destroying natural systems like the ozone layer. So we're on the fast track for a planet that won't support life in the very near term. If we don't change directions, there'll be nothing left to salvage soon. But I would argue many people shut down if they think, well, they can't have the Disney World vacation or the Caribbean cruise. Is that why we're here? That's my question. Are we here just to pursue personal pleasures or to make a difference and to preserve something for our posterity? If the answer is the latter, then we have an obligation to try to salvage what we can of what's left of the planet's life support systems, and that's well worth fighting for. If that's not a reason to stand up and make your voice heard, then I don't know what is, Jay.
Well, why do you think that we are like this? Why are we so reactive instead of proactive as a species? What is it about the psyche of the collective that just seems to prevent us from making the necessary changes at the time when it's most beneficial and only really lifting our heads up out of the sand when it's become essentially too late? Why is that about humanity? What is it that causes this type of lack in survival mechanism? You would think it would be part of our entire genetic coding to maintain our planet, but it's not.
Well, that is the most profound question of all. Thank you for asking that. And there's certainly a lot of research done in that arena, and it seems to be a primitive wiring of the human species to face only an immediate threat, only something kicking in the front door. But the tidal wave looming over the house is not recognized or acknowledged. And it seems to be something that many have not been able to face. And let's add programming to that. How programmed are we as societies to want only a happy ending, or I don't want to hear about it? And that is so incredibly prevalent in our populations. And again, I would argue that the only solace there is in knowing you're exercising your will correctly, playing your part, trying to preserve something for our posterity, for our children, for the web of life on which their lives completely depend. And that's the only place I've ever been able to find solace, is knowing that I'm doing everything in my power to be a part of the cure and not the disease. And that's where solace and meaning and purpose lies, not in football games and pizza and Coke and beer. And what purpose is there in that? And given what we face right now, how can we face our children if we don't properly prioritize, Jay?
Do you think that there's a lot of people talk about the idea of cycles of destruction on this planet, and that some things are simply unavoidable, and that we are actually entering into a time of the great solar maximum and these polar axis shifts, and that I guess a lot of people who are in the alternative space who don't like to think of any sort of human-made climatological impact do seem to lean towards the idea that it's unavoidable and it's cyclical and it's part of the process. But what do you think about that? The idea that there have been previous rises and falls and maybe even previous civilizations before our time?
Another great question. Thank you. And you're completely correct. Many people do fall back on that conclusion. And here's my response. There's nothing natural about the current Earth changes. It would be like an example I've used before. It would be like running someone over in a crosswalk, burning them, beating them, stabbing them, shooting them, and claiming they died of a heart attack. It's natural. People die. They wouldn't have died then. So how can we possibly inflict the damage we have on this planet, this miraculous planet? And it is truly incomprehensibly miraculous. How can we do what we've done without consequence? And it's truly mind-numbing to me that people can try to convince themselves of that. So again, if we look at the cyclical patterns of the planet, we have completely disrupted that. The Earth's in the elliptical phase of its orbit. It should be in a cooling phase again. It's not. It's superheating. And again, people can find whatever reason they want for the changes in thermal energy buildup on the planet. They can blame it on whatever they want. But to deny that it's happening is simply irrational at this point. And it's not about Al Gore. Nobody likes Al Gore that I know of. I certainly don't. He shows up in his private jet at all these conferences and so forth. And he's a part of the problem. But I literally have spoken to very intelligent people who deny the damage to the planet because their disdain for Al Gore is so immense. That's not a basis on which to come to a conclusion. So again, Occam's razor, all things being equal, the most obvious scenario is the most likely. We've laid waste to this planet. We've destroyed the life support systems. The atmospheric oxygen content is plummeting because we've wiped out plankton, wiping out the forest, and we're disrupting the former energy balance of the planet. How can we not have consequences with that?
Well, there seems to be so many things that happen in this day and age that you would imagine would come with such incredible consequences for those that are committing these crimes against humanity. But every single time they seem to pass right through a loophole of some form, and the climate crimes seem to be no different in that regard. Is there anything optimistic about the way in which this is being addressed these days? Maybe the attention that's getting put onto your film? I mean, you said it reached about 26 million people on YouTube. That's impressive on YouTube alone because of the way in which they treat people in the alternative space. So that would suggest that there is, at the very least, a gaining of consciousness, a gaining of interest, a gaining of awareness. And really, I think when you're dealing with such massive Goliaths of issues and such huge monopolies and empires and elite structures of power and institutional control, the only thing you can really do is raise awareness. And you seem to be doing that.
That's an excellent line of thought and questioning. Thank you. I agree with you completely on that. The only way forward in this fight is to reach a critical mass of awareness so that those participating, especially our military brothers and sisters, who are being told they're doing something benevolent, something for the greater good, which couldn't be further from the truth, they need to understand, their families need to understand that they're literally participating in their own demise. If we can stop what's happening in our skies, if we can allow the planet to respond on its own to the damage done, then we may at least at minimum buy time. And that's absolutely worth fighting for. But that will take all of us to reach this critical mass of awareness. And it starts by sharing credible data from a credible source in regard to the attempts to mask what's unfolding. For example, the current administration in the U.S. About 4 weeks ago, the head of the EPA, Lee Zeldin, tried to claim, this is their limited hangout strategy approach of pretending they're doing something when they're doing exactly the opposite. So Lee Zeldin announced he was going to look into this issue, starting with, again, two clowns from Silicon Valley called Make Sunsets. They launched a few balloons, Jay. They launched 140 balloons, each balloon containing less than 10 grams of SO2. We're not talking about SO2 being the problem here. We're talking about aluminum, barium, strontium, manganese, polymer fibers, surfactants, graphene. So they have this massive distraction from Lee Zeldin that they're going to pursue these two characters that have done virtually nothing that matters. A few balloons from Baja California and Nevada, as if that's the problem. That failed. That attempt to pretend they were going to do something about this issue failed. And now what do we have? We have RFK at an event, the Dr. Phil show. He was being interviewed. I don't know if you've seen this or not, but he was asked by a member of the audience about this issue. And RFK's response was to basically blame it on jet fuel, which means jet exhaust. Again, we're right back to a regurgitated official denial, just jet exhaust. This is not just jet exhaust. It's a sprayed particulate dispersion, period. You cannot run tens of millions of tons of abrasive material through jet engines and have those planes fly. They would all come down to the ground in short order. Again, this is just more regurgitated official denial coming out of this administration. Why would we think we're going to get anything other than that? And the last president in the U.S., I'll leave with this, Jay, the last president to actually draw a line in the sand with the power structure was JFK. How long did he live after that? They took him out in about a week. Everything else is theater. I don't care what political stripe it is. It's all theater.
It's a good point to make. And with RFK Jr., what do you think explains that? Do you think it's ignorance to that particular field of research, or do you think it's more about adhering to a silent control structure?
I know Robert. He's interviewed me before. He contacted me about 8 weeks ago on this issue and seemed bent on trying to see if I had any whistleblower or contact, as if I should know the names and addresses of whoever's doing this. And that was a line of questioning that I don't understand why he would even go there. I mean, how long have we known about the assassination of his father and uncle? And do we know the names and addresses of those who did that? The fact that you don't know the names and addresses of specific criminals doesn't mean the crime didn't happen. And my point with Robert in that short phone call was that if this administration was in any way serious about dealing with this issue, the first thing they would do is enact carved in stone whistleblower protection and publicize that. And of course, we've seen no action in that direction, nor do I believe we will see any action in that direction. So again, the rest is just smoke and mirrors. And whether I do know that the group that's closest to advising him has specifically pulled in disinformation, some of the biggest disinformation people out there that are pushing it's just jet exhaust. And so why are they intentionally doing that? I was actually asked to be an advisor on this group prior to them doing a 180, literally overnight, a 180, pulling in the individuals that are pushing the it's just jet exhaust disinformation. Why would they do that? Why would Robert work with those people? Why would Robert work with other groups that have done everything they can to deny this issue? Why would he do that? And I know he's known about this, Jay, since at least 2012, when Woody Harrelson at Woody's home gave him the whole rundown on this issue. I knew about that right when it happened. Robert did nothing all this time, nothing. And again, the latest statement that basically insinuated this is more or less just jet exhaust, that's definitely not an accurate trajectory. I'll leave it at that.
If there's one message that you could embed into the consciousness of every person who is listening to this right now about this issue, what would it be?
That each of them could make a far greater difference in this battle than they would ever imagine if they simply learned how to effectively and efficiently sound the alarm. And you do that by sharing credible data from a credible source. You share that with the people around you. You ask them to do the same. And again, if I could give the mathematical equation, if one person effectively shared credible data with two people in the first day of a 30-day month, those two each the second day, and so on for 30 days, we're into the millions. And people might think my math is wrong, but it's not. And so we could turn this equation exponentially in our favor if we can fully expose what's happening in our skies and populations around the world understand what's been done to them by their governments without their knowledge or consent. That would be the shockwave around the world, Jay. I would argue a shockwave greater than any other, because everything else is related to this. Even the CV-19 issue and the fact that those in power are definitely trying to cull the herd. There's no question about that. How obvious can that be? From death of a thousand cuts from every direction, they're trying to debilitate populations in every way they can. And if I can weave this together in a more ominous form, we know we have polymer fibers and graphene in our precipitation. Those elements are named in climate engineering patents as well, but they're also used militarily as, quote, biological carrier platforms. What's that mean? To carry a pathogen from the clouds to the ground for biowarfare and military operations. What's that doing in our rain? And shouldn't that alarm the hell out of us? Now, if we look at the second most recognized climate engineer in the world, Dr. Ken Caldera, we own an audio at Geoengineering Watch of him stating on the record, what he did for the U.S. DOD, Department of Defense, was to design methods of spraying pathogens in the clouds to infect the populations below. We know in the outbreak of CV-19, we had 85 countries infected in 3 days. That's indicative of an airborne dispersion. We have Italian researchers that identified CV-19 attached to airborne particulates. Do not these dots connect? And why wouldn't we think that the powers that be wouldn't disperse something much more lethal if they're beginning to lose control, when we know from historical record, according to the Washington Post, as far back as 1977, the U.S. military had conducted no less than 239 open-air biological tests on innocent, unknowing U.S. civilians. What will it take to wake people up to the severity of what's unfolding and that those in power are not here to help them? What will it take? So bottom line, all of us have the power to alter this equation. Any one of us could be the final pebble to trigger the landslide of awakening. And the only way we find out how much we can accomplish is to fully engage in this battle now, today. Tomorrow's too late.